I had no idea how much eating and drinking would be involved in being a minister. And I certainly had no idea how many lunches, dinners, coffees, breakfasts even, would be involved in serving as the minister of the Church of Scotland, Geneva. That's because sharing a meal together changes things, offers us a chance to get close to each other, to build bridges, to ratchet up the intimacy. It can be a real opportunity to get to know someone in a new way, take the connection to the next level, a new level. You know how it happens when you move beyond meeting someone for a cup of coffee and you take it to the next level, to meet for lunch or have them round for dinner, leading possibly to developing a new friendship. Jesus of Nazareth certainly liked to eat with people, so much so that he was accused by some of his critics of being, and I quote, a glutton and a drunkard. But he clearly knew that something different happened in the shared dynamic of a meal together. In different contexts, there were different experiences, but always new links, new discoveries made. It was his habitual eating with disreputable people that gained him his bad press. This man eats with sinners, his critics complained. Their criticisms didn't seem to bother him too much because he kept doing it. It was his way. Though he wasn't exclusive, he would eat with anyone, Pharisees and prigs included. He was prepared to ignore barriers at whatever end of the scale he encountered them in order to take the opportunities on offer from whomsoever they came, to get up close and personal, to let people see beyond the myth to the man himself. For the context of a meal together offered that special chance to brush aside the caricatures and meet the real Jesus, hear what he really had to say to you, to get beyond the stereotyping and the self-imposed prejudices about him, and to meet the man as he was, with openness and honest engagement. Relaxed around the table was the time to meet, to surprise, to engage, to reveal. So to sit at table with the man Jesus was a crucial and often pivotal moment. Risky, surprising, when friendship might be found, truth disclosed, discoveries made. Whether that was 5,000 at a surprise picnic on the sloping meadowland beside the Sea of Tiberias, or a little group of rather nervous disciples by a crackling fire on the seashore when the risen Christ gives them bread and fish and hope, or after that long walk and that deep talk on the road to Emmaus, when grief is shared and bread is broken. But in all of these encounters, something is going on, a new place is reached, and their relationship with him is taken beyond polite recognition to intimacy, beyond the legend and into their experience. The difference between hearing about someone and listening to them yourself. The difference between knowing a bit about someone and knowing that someone for yourself. This is a critical shift in the dynamic, a whole new ball game. And there was that famous meal, the Passover supper, the Last Supper, with its sinister undertones mingling with such special feelings, betrayal and sharing, giving and treachery, somber anticipation, telling symbolism, death, blood and brokenness, the sense of something ending, yet something mysterious and wonderful, beginning, promise of new things, the solidarity of friendship and the certainty of abandonment, the whisper of tasks soon to be completed, missions soon to be accomplished. So many tremors of intent, so many moods and moments gathered in that candle-lit room with his closest friends and his terrifying future. Jesus sat at supper with his disciples, and he took bread. And in that closeness and intimacy, love is poured out, and they knew that this was special. These feelings would last. It's this specialness, this closeness of spirit, that's echoed in the story of the two disciples after Easter encountering the risen Christ on the road to Emmaus, and how they discover the new reality of the living presence of their risen Lord when they settle down to share a meal of bread and wine, and they are transfixed and inspired by a close encounter with Christ's characteristic action and deepest gift. They begin to understand now that life and love and his living promise are with them. And this is the new truth that transforms their tomorrows. Gloom is turned to glorious hope. Their hunched and drooping shoulders are stiffened with resolve, and they know that their lives and the life of the world are changed forever because of him, because he is with them and will be. Truth encountered at the table. So yes, sharing a meal is the context where such things can happen, because it offers a special place, a safe place, in which there can be increased intimacy. And this is what it's all about. This is what meals shared do. They bring us closer. They open us up to each other. The connection can never be quite as distant and aloof as it was before, because we've shared a meal together. New intensity, new insights, new tolerance, new respect. This is why so many romantic relationships begin or soon involve a candlelit dinner. Over the relaxed experience of a shared meal, defences are lowered, closeness is encouraged, the softening up process happens, and intimacy beckons. But intimacy has a hard time in a world of walls and barriers, fragile egos protected by cold formality. We fear exposure. We fear being known in our vulnerabilities. We hold back from sharing because sharing leaves us naked and raw, and we are known as we are, without illusion or the ability to hide or pretend. Over that meal together, barriers crumble, walls collapse, doors open. We dare to let each other in. If it's the powerful surge of intimacy that we want, the experience of being the church together in fellowship and worship and shared service, then the church is a place where that intimacy might be encouraged, encountered, indeed where it can hardly be avoided. However, if the last thing we want is intimacy, and for some that is the last thing they want, then please bring formality to the front of the queue. Make sure any attempt to winkle open each other's feelings, really to get to know one another, is avoided. Keep it all in the head and well away from the heart. Keep the distances, keep the silences. Or, alternatively, carefully structure everything in such a way that order, procedure, the rule of the day, liturgy, are in charge. And sharing, risk, spontaneity are well and truly smothered by the rigorous demand to do things in the right way. There may be cultural and geographical factors in all of this. If we are dour Scots locked into a model of religion that is more about good order than good feelings, and if the way the church we worship in is set up conspires to aggravate and preserve that distance between rather than bridge it, then it's no wonder we take a long time to break through legalistic language and the things that have to be said in the way that they've always had to be said, and the things that have to be done in the way they've always had to be done. And we can embrace a kind of escapism or a denial in all of this. Keep the lid on things. Prevent the spirit from daring some disruption, some living moment that stirs, touches, disturbs, warms, challenges. Raw. Real. For sometimes, truth be told, the last person we want intimacy with is God. We'll talk about Jesus all day long, but talk with Jesus. Talking to God, being with God in the stillness, takes us beyond the safety zone into close connecting, into that moment when spirit addresses spirit, and there's nowhere to hide, no legal language to shelter behind. Only the two, God and us. God and us. Scary, unpredictable, precious, holy and awesome, tender and fine, but definitely different from religion at one remove, God kept conveniently at arm's length. When we have chosen to move out of the ordinary into the possibility of the extraordinary, and religion is no longer words, even fine and lovely words, it's feelings and spiritual awakenings and who knows what, because now there are just the two of us, and the protective barriers of formalism are gone, and we stand, we kneel, we listen, and we wait on God. And we know that nowhere is that level of intimacy more available to us than in the sacrament of Holy Communion, the shared meal of the church, echoing the intimacy of the upper room, where Jesus, in the crisis of imminent suffering, enjoys that special moment with his friends over the meal, and he is succoured and sustained, encouraged and embraced. And in turn, he offers them his love, his life, to nourish and sustain them for the battle ahead, for the mission they are called to. There, in the gloom and fragile warmth of the upper room, the table spread, the bread and wine in their hand, they are as close as they will ever be with each other and with their Lord. When we allow the Spirit of God to recreate something of those feelings, something of that connection, something that is real communion, then the sacrament is a powerful moment, a deep thing of the soul. When we share together in deep expressions of spiritual love. And this is so much more than an occasional obligation, but becomes a sacred event full of tenderness and commonality. For we all feel the love. We all share the wet-eyed wonder that he died for us because he loved us so much. We look around at our brothers and sisters in the church family, and love binds us together. A sense of privilege and mystery drives us to our knees. And there's nothing here about making sure we do it right and we adhere to the book of rules. This is not an official banquet for foreign dignitaries where the pressures of protocol put everyone on edge and on their best behaviour. This is a meal a friend shares with his friends, and when we block its creative power with the walls of man-made divisions, man-made traditions, man-made fear of doing something out of order, then we wreck its true purpose and rob ourselves of its possibility, its capacity to reach us in deep places. Who are we, this thing called the church? A disparate group who share a hobby with an enthusiasm for a particular philosophy of life, or brothers and sisters in Christ drawn together by his spirit of love, caring and carrying, willing to walk together on the road, finding the presence and the love of God together, daring the lion's den of intimacy with each other and with our God.